It's season 3, episode 1 of Phases for Radio. I got too excited then. My face just went, oh, yeah. We're back. It's season
one. Man moment.
No, listen, be excited. Man. It's season 3. We're it's episode back. 1 of Phases for Radio. I'm Danny Lenahan.
I'm Phil Close.
And I am Tim McEwen.
Welcome to the show. It's been a couple of months.
It has been a few months.
It's been a couple
it's
of months.
It's been a while.
We've been busy.
We've been busy.
We have been busy.
Some of us have been busier than others.
Well, you're a lady of leisure, aren't you?
I am a lady what lunches. Quite often.
Didn't we have this conversation before on the podcast? About?
Yeah. You've berated me before about being a stay-at-home dad. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being a stay-at-home
dad.
No,
there isn't.
In fact, I've virtually gone part-time so I can do exactly the same. So
there you go.
I would not change the time I spend with my children for anybody.
See, I would encourage Cheryl not to go part-time.
No, because she's the breadwinner.
Yes. I work half days.
Yeah, what, two a day?
My boss just lets me choose which 12 hours that half day is.
There's a few new things have changed. The digs haven't. We're still in the 3LT studio, or the meeting room at the back, mm-hmm. the chicken shed. But we've got some new gear.
Yeah, I've got some new shoes.
Have you? No, that's not what I meant.
Oh, okay.
Although we are using the new mugs that you purchased us.
Yeah, do you know what? Since I bought those, I see them everywhere now.
Yeah, so do I. Did you buy them from Poddington Garden Centre?
No. I bought them at Beals in Bedford.
Oh, yeah. Because they've got them at Poddington.
Yeah, I know they have. I saw them there the other day.
And at Frost's in Willington.
And Frost's. I saw them there as well. We were looking at garden furniture. That was interesting.
We are actually sponsored by Frost's Garden Furniture.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a really low bar, isn't it? Like, if we're heading out for sponsorship, it's like, guys, right, we need to get some sponsorships and funding for the show so that we can push forward and become sort of
we are not sponsored by Aldi.
Elite. Let's choose a garden centre down the road and their, and more particularly, their outdoor furniture department.
Have you shopped for outdoor furniture recently?
It's really expensive
in
Frost.
It's so expensive. It is.
Actually, you know what? We took the kids there. Gay and I took the kids there about a month or so ago because I had to pick up a couple of things. Can't remember what it was we were getting. But we were looking at that like sort of swing chair that's just inside where all the kids' toys are before the furniture bit starts. And there's like whole veranda sets are like £7,000-8,000.
Yep.
Oh, we've just furnished our back garden. It hasn't been delivered yet, but we've spent over £3,000.
Oh, really? Have you got a shower and a toilet?
No.
Are you tiling the walls?
What?
What are you doing? You spent £3,000 on what for the garden?
Furniture.
Furniture?
Yeah.
Okay. What sort? Have you got like a sideboard?
Like comfortable sofa chairs and swing chairs and recliners and stuff like that.
You got a puffy?
I've got two. I've also got a couple of stools as well. The puffy only comes around when I ask him to.
It's season 3, episode 1 of Faces for Radio. Faces for Radio is a This Working production. You can find out more at attentionseekingmediahalls.com. So it's been a couple of months. We haven't had a chance to adapt to our new equipment. I'd like to give a nod to Rode for luzzing me a Rodecaster Pro and 3 pod mics.
Thank you, Rode.
And we'd like to apologise to listeners for the quality of our recording still, because you can buy all the equipment in the world, but if we're still shit, we're still shit.
I think our problem was always the equipment and not the brains.
Do you think?
Yeah.
So that the equipment in the old shows was responsible for the amount of toilet we spoke.
Have I told you about the buttons?
The buttons?
We've got buttons.
Oh, yeah, we've got pre-recorded sounds
now. Can you press the
now,
purple we? Button, Dan?
Purple button goes...
You know I'm anti-religion, right?
There you is, know Phil and I recorded that in one take.
There is a longer version of that where they go up a key and everything, but it just sounds like someone squeezing their testicles.
Yeah, that's what me and Tim had to do to record it.
I can't remember what. Oh, that's the theme tune. I forgot.
Yeah, well, we've got theme tune on the button.
Yeah, that's right there.
Can we have that playing in the background?
We can talk over that while there's a bit of fading into the show. We're about to kick in for season 3, and there's music in the background. It's pretty awesome. And here it ramps up into the do-do-do-do-do.
Right, why do you nod your head like a chicken when that music comes? I know we're in a chicken shed.
I was going into hip-hop mode. Hip-hop.
I don't see hip-hoppers doing a lot of chicken movements.
I haven't told you about my new favourite thing to do. Right, so a couple of weeks back, George won. He got Star of the Week at school.
Well done, George.
Yeah, I was pretty stoked by it. So I said to him, okay, look, where do you want to go to? I give them £25 present. If they win Star of the Week, it's my little gift to them, because it only happens a couple of times a year. Yeah. Mm. So we went to Paper Chase, of all places. George wanted to go to Rushton Lakes. There's a couple of shops in there. He wanted to go to an H&M and pick up a couple of things. And
did he want a cardboard file or something?
Right, no. So we went to Paper Chase and he bought a rubber hand shark. This rubber hand shark is awesome. So basically it's like a floppy rubber shark's head that you put your hand into like a puppet.
Right.
And my favourite thing right now is to put music on the Sonos and sing with the shark. And it's brilliant because it's so expressive, because it's completely floppy latexy rubber.
Right.
You can move its face into like O noises and everything and sing whatever you want. So I've had the kids literally in hysterics doing Bohemian Rhapsody. And then last night I said, George was like, can Sharky sing me to sleep? So we played Tone Loc, Wild Thing. And I've just got this shark going, working all week, 9 to 5 for my money. So when the weekend comes, I go get lied with my honey. Of course, George has got no idea the implication of the said lyrics. But Sharky was singing, and George just sits there nodding his head along to it. It's very funny.
Sharks live in water, so they can't sing.
They have no vocal cords.
It's actually the bit I got. There was about a 15-minute stretch where George couldn't actually breathe from laughing. Where I had a conversation with him. I was the shark, and I have to try and do the whole ventriloquist thing and keep my lips closed while George talks to the shark and asks it questions. And George went, "Shark, why do you look like you're in pain?" And I went, "Because someone's hands up my ass."
Talking about
7-year-old boy laughing his head off.
Talking about sharks. When I went on my golf trip a couple of months back, the movie of choice on the airline was The Meg.
Oh, it's terrible.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a terrible movie.
If you can suspend your understanding of marine life and general scientific principles, it's still shit.
Yes. Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Oh.
I saw part of the trailer.
You are missing out big time.
Now,
Tim should watch it.
Do you have Amazon Prime?
Yes.
So don't watch the movie, but do a search for five-headed shark attack.
Oh, no.
And watch the trailer.
Is that like Sharktopus?
It is the funniest thing I've ever seen. The shark...
Actually funny.
...jumps out of the water and pulls a helicopter out of the sky.
Yeah, because it can do that.
Wow, how big is this shark?
2/3 the size of the helicopter.
Do you know the strange thing, Tim? The Meg does exactly the same thing.
Yeah, it does,
thing.
Yeah.
It grabs a helicopter out of the sky.
It's
a terrible movie.
Yeah.
Speaking of bad movies,
dreadful.
I'm going through a bit of a phase at the minute where I'm watching some movies I've seen before, just watching them again because I remember quite liking them the first time. And you remember we had a conversation in either the last show or the one before that where we were talking about Tom Hanks films and had he done a bad film? Yeah. And I think we agreed that he hadn't really done a bad film. Yeah, there's certainly lower ends of the...
Yeah, Terminal's a bit boring.
I liked Terminal.
Yeah, it's still Terminal. Entertaining, yeah. But I think it's a little bit low-key, I think.
It made me want to eat crackers with mustard.
It made me want to plaster a wall.
It made me want to speak Persian. Oh, what was the little Indian guy speaking? Is it Hindi or...
I have no idea. I can't remember.
Oh, I can't remember.
My wife went into labour the night we watched that.
Oh, that's right. I remember we talked about that. So anyway, it got me thinking. I watched a film with Idris Elba in it.
And okay.
Who's
Heimdall.
He's brilliant actor.
But he's been in some bad movies.
Oh, dear God. Yeah. So this is actually one of those movies which you I think we'd probably notch it into a good bad movie. But the plot is, the script is dreadful. I mean, it's so hammed up and so... All right, so you're going to guess the movie.
I've guessed already.
Have you? What is it?
Pacific Rim.
It is!
Have you seen Pacific Rim 2?
I have not, no.
Oh, my God.
Is it called Pacific Rimming?
Ah.
Pacific Rim, how bad is the script in that
it's
film?
It's actually called... The second one's called Pacific Rim, Just Cause.
It is a terrible movie. I mean, I like
the
monsters.
The visuals are good, though.
I like science fiction.
The visuals are good. I mean, the monsters and the Jaegers are superb. But the thing is, you've got... Half the time, you've got no idea of scale. So they could actually be just 6 foot tall because they're in the middle of the ocean.
The kaiju is funny enough. Yeah. I was listening to Mark Como was doing a review of the new Godzilla movie.
I was just about to say, doesn't that look exactly the same as Pacific Rim?
Actually, he was saying that Pacific Rim got the whole scale of it. They got it right. I mean, the thing that Pacific Rim got right was the visuals. Like you said, it was the whole concept of the two brains needed to run these giant machines. Yeah. I didn't really understand why the head would be a separate mechanism that they step into and then it goes down a lift onto the body. Like, why didn't they get an elevator up to the head and then climb in?
It doesn't take as long then.
But it's
so weird.
I love that part of it because I like the old Japanese manga and Godzilla things.
That's where it all comes from.
And the whole idea of things latching together and I don't know why I'm doing hand... gestures. The viewers at home won't appreciate that.
Maybe if you drew an illustration to demonstrate, it may help.
Yes. One of our famous illustrations.
Famous of illustrations.
The, of the pod penetrating the Jaeger from above.
Do you know what I don't get? Is that why do they... Right.
Have you seen the trailer for that new Godzilla movie?
I haven't, no.
It's like Royal Rumble, Godzilla style. It's him against everyone else.
Yeah, see, I heard it's not very good. But the thing about Pacific Rim, there's a few
bits...
You
need to hear a review to figure out that...
Well, did you see the original Godzilla movie, the one that this is the sequel to?
So I liked the original Godzilla movie. With, the one that had...
Matthew Broderick.
Matthew Broderick, and it's shot in New York.
That was okay.
Yeah, well, it was Jurassic Park, but with Godzilla, wasn't it, really?
Yeah.
It was all... glitzy and Hollywood.
It was a bit freaky with all the baby ones.
Love story and Chernobyl worms.
But but Godzilla, the one that came, the one that is the prequel to this one, is so dull.
Oh, it's awful.
It's so boring. As a Godzilla movie, as a monster movie, so boring.
Yeah, I didn't.
So why did they make a sequel?
Oh, who knows? Because people like giant monsters that are just ruining towns.
But they made a sequel to Cloverfield.
Yeah, what's
which
that about?
Which just was tedious.
Yeah, which had no connection to the original movie at all.
Oh, to drop in a clanger that you've mentioned on a show before. I mean, we're at Fast and Furious 8.
Oh God!
I mean, really? You know, it's
outrun a submarine.
You can understand if it's a successful. I mean, there must be a successful franchise because they're making a lot of money, which is why they're making new movies. But
well, they got their new one, haven't they? They got the one with Dwayne Johnson and Jason Statham in.
Oh,
them,
I've
which
got
is a, just the two of them saving the world.
I have a bone to pick.
Really? And they got, and so talking about the sharks grabbing helicopters in the trailer for this film, for the Fast and Furious Shore and whatever, I can't remember what the other name is. They've actually got cars using grappling hooks that bring down a helicopter.
That's ridiculous.
The helicopter would pick up a car on a grappling hook.
I have a bone to pick with Timothy for a recommendation on a movie. Oh. Him and Zeke recommended it when we were doing Zeke's podcast.
I missed out on this one.
Yeah, you were playing golf. We do talk about you actually in it. You're mentioned a few times, isn't he?
Really?
We reminded people how sad it was that the only one of us that's funny wasn't there.
Yeah, several times. We were sitting here doing. We recorded Zeke's podcast in here when you were in Turkey. It was the day after we'd been to Alton Towers, wasn't it?
Did you feel dirty while you were doing it behind my back?
No, because it was his podcast. We just recorded it here for him because he was over here at the time.
He still used our studio, though.
Well, yeah, but you were supposed to be here.
He was.
I feel even worse now.
Yeah, he filled your space. Worse than
I
that.
I feel unclean. I need a shower.
He recommended a movie and Tim went, oh, yeah, I really like that.
Oh, go on.
Baywatch.
Oh, it was brilliant.
It's just dreadful.
Oh, my daughter.
It has a few funny moments in it.
It has, but Zac Efron.
But probably only about two.
Didn't he peak 10 years ago?
Oh, my God.
Are you saying that High School Musical was his peak, Dan?
Yes.
No, saying Zac Efron peaked, have you watched the Ted Bundy movie.
I have not. Oh, because he plays Ted Bundy,
doesn't he?
He
is awesome.
I've heard he's amazing.
Yeah. Really, really good.
Mind you, I felt it. What was the one we watched where we didn't realise it was Paul Bettany until like the last episode?
That was Mindhunter.
Unabomber.
Unabomber, Manhunter.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise it was Paul Bettany until literally like some second to last episode or something ridiculous. No, that was, I mean, inspired acting. Baywatch was fucking dreadful.
Yeah. I have to agree.
Wanted to watch, my daughter, Caitlin, wanted to watch Baywatch. And I was like, no, we're not watching that. It's going to be terrible. And she took her half an hour to persuade me to watch it. And I put it on and I'm thinking, God, I'm going to hate this. And I laughed and laughed and laughed. Because it didn't take itself seriously at all.
One of the funniest things was the way Dwayne Johnson kept taking the piss out of Zac Efron. And when he called him High School Musical.
Yes, he did.
Very funny.
Yeah. I mean, there was
one of the funniest bits in the whole film.
But there were lots of callbacks to things like that. I mean, I thought bringing in the Hoff, who didn't he look like? He looked more like the Hef. He's about 803 years old.
Wasn't it worse with what's her face at the end?
Pamela Anderson.
Pamela Anderson at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, excuse me. Does it say inflate to 12 PSI inside your lips? I mean, ridiculous.
Well, it's just doing it for the sake of doing it, isn't it? It's like if you ever watch that dreadful remake of Ghostbusters with all the women cast, they've got all the surviving cast members, all the original cast members.
Yeah, doing cameos.
And it's just, I think it's just to try and... ride on the back of the success of the first two
and
films.
I don't mind a 2016 film. I don't think it's very good compared to the...
Dribble.
I think they had a nice idea. I just think
Chris
they got
Hemsworth
it wrong.
Was dreadful.
Yeah, what was that
it
about?
It is one of the worst films. Very, very rarely make me angry, but that film made me angry.
What are you talking about? Films make me angry all the time.
Yeah, me too.
That's why my anger counts. Because it's saved for particular moments.
Do we all feel particularly het up at the minute? Because if we do, I'm just going to introduce what we talked about. Because if there's a bit of anger here, we might as well spiral.
if we're talking about films that anger us, yeah.
All right. So look, we had this moment a couple of months ago where we stopped recording for a couple of months. We'd all been really busy, separate things going on in our lives, and finding it difficult to find the time to get this sorted. And we're now back on track and recording. But I made a suggestion and Phil immediately had a strop about it.
Yeah, I didn't want to do it.
He was like, no, not doing it. And I'm like, dude, we have to do it because, I think you'll agree, by the time we finish this, you'll be glad that we did because it is painful. And
it was an hour and a half, right? It took me nine hours to watch it.
It's a documentary called Beyond the Curve and it's on Netflix and it's about people that believe the earth is flat.
It's about complete imbeciles.
Oh, dear God. I mean, it's the guy had so much credibility, he's recording from the basement of his mum's house.
Shout out to Mark Sargent. You bellend.
Yes.
So
what a twat.
Mark Sargent?
Yeah, he was
the
guy.
He's the principal guy. But what I thought was interesting was...
I did not write the names down, I'm sorry.
No. When he was introducing... When he was talking about how the Flat Earth movement began, and he said this one... I can't remember the guy... This one principal guy who was still saying it. And then they cut to him about 5 years later and he's turned into a raving lunatic. They got video of him like ranting about aliens and stuff.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, this is where Flat Earth came from.
I think the thing for me was, the brilliant thing about was there was a couple of guys throughout the whole show whose only job was to disprove the theory of a globe.
Yeah.
Earth, right?
Yeah.
And so they decided to spend... an inordinate amount of money disproving the spherical nature of this earth. So one of the early theories they came up with is that if we rotate once in 24 hours, every hour we move 15 degrees around.
That's correct.
A 15 degree segment.
Yeah.
So he went and spent 30 grand on a
gyroscope.
Gyroscope gimbal thing.
Yeah.
Which is what they use in aircraft to plot where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And
because they have to over a globe.
And like at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he set it, looked at where it was, and then left it for an hour, came back, and lo and behold, we moved 15 degrees. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then he built a Faraday cage and put it inside the Faraday cage.
Wasn't that because he thought that the government were broadcasting like fake information that would tamper with technology so that it
something
would make
like
it look
that.
Like we were on a globe.
Or perhaps it was being affected by a rotatable magnetic
pole.
But
what happened, Dan, when he placed the gyroscope inside a Faraday cage?
It moved 15 degrees in an hour.
Well, I wonder why that could be.
And then what did they do next? Didn't they put it in like a concrete shell or something?
No, then you had the guy at the end who was doing the experiment where the really, really, you know, technical scientific experiment where he had a board that was a certain height. And then he went 100 yards away and put another board with a hole the same height on that board. And he said, if I shine a laser through it, if the Earth's flat, the laser should go through the hole in the other one. If the Earth's curved, laser should end up just above the hole.
And oh, that's
the,
right. That's
the
right.
Laser ended and up just above the hole.
Yeah.
So then they extended the experiment and made it even
they
bigger.
Said it wasn't
because
far
they said
enough
it wasn't,
away.
Wasn't far enough away. So they did it far enough away.
And then
they shined a really bright light through it, and they was like, well, that's weird, we can't see the light at the other end.
That's because it was missing the whole pole.
Yeah, so he goes, raise the pole up a bit. So I raised the pole up and there was the light.
Yeah,
and the guy who was doing the experiment went, well, that's weird. Like, it's not fucking weird.
Yeah,
it's because of the curvature of the Earth, you twat.
There's a couple of there's a couple of moments that early on in the film there was an explanation as to why one of the key principals had gone. And he said he was watching a flight tracker website and he couldn't see a single flight going across the ocean. South Atlantic.
Yeah.
No, he said you'll notice no planes travel over water, which is brilliant because we live in the UK and it's impossible to go anywhere without traveling over water.
Specifically,
it's impossible to go anywhere by boat.
No one goes over the water between South America, South Africa,
that's it, yeah,
and Australia.
Yeah.
And then, so being the kind of curious chap that I am, I went onto a flight tracker.
How many planes did you see?
He was like, they did this like mock movie of it, and he was like, the clock's going round and round, spinning time. And he goes, I watched, and I didn't see a single one. I saw 20 in 4 minutes.
Yeah, well, you would.
Because they're going across there all the time.
The interesting thing about that was that they picked up on a particular flight path, which was Santiago to Melbourne. So Santiago in Chile to Melbourne, Australia, and it's a 14-hour flight.
Mm.
But if you look at the mock-up flat Earth map,
yeah,
the way it's mapped out, they use the UK and Europe as like the centre.
Yeah,
it's like actually you've got America.
So they got
and the UK, yeah, as the centre, and then.
But surely that would make Melbourne and Santiago in Chile very, very far apart.
Completely the opposite ends of the planet.
Like, it took about a week to fly it. Right.
So the interesting thing is here is that you can fly from the UK to Australia, which was the centre of the map to Australia, and the actual flight time is about 22, 23 hours to Melbourne, something like that.
Yeah.
18 to Perth. But, I mean, it's a six-hour flight from Perth to Sydney, so it makes sense. It's about 23 hours or something like that to Melbourne. And yeah, it's only 14 hours from Santiago to Melbourne. And Santiago was at least twice the distance on their map from Australia than England was.
Yeah.
It's just nonsense. These guys, they must look at the moon and go, oh, look at that flat disc sky.
No, they think the moon's projected.
What? Because they do. They think there's a dome over the Earth.
They think there's a dome that is like a massive, astrology centre. Where
I think we're sitting in some glass dome.
Yeah, they project stars into
the sky. It's like a massive Eden project.
To fool us. What I want to know is...
It's like the Hunger Games.
What could the government possibly achieve by fooling everyone into thinking that the Earth is round?
This is exactly my point as well, Phil, and I'm glad you brought it up. Let's imagine us three were massive conspirators and we were going to convince everyone that the world was round. I think we'd need to satisfy three things for us to work out if it was worth the bother. This is the purpose, i.e. what we're going to do, the process, i.e. how we're going to do it, and then the payoff. If we go to all this effort, how rich are we going to become as a result of it?
Not at all.
But the thing is, if you're going to tell everyone that the world is a globe, you get absolutely nothing in return for what has got to be the most expensive conspiracy of all time.
Oh, can you
and you're literally no richer for it.
The thing is, like, I mean, people have tried to say, you can't reason with them because they're so argumentative that anything you say, they'll turn it round or they've got an answer for it.
You're a bit like that sometimes.
No, not to the extreme. I know the Earth is a globe. because I'm not fucking stupid.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And also I've seen photographs that NASA have taken from space that show it as a globe. That was my favourite experiment, was the very last one with the weather balloon, where it went up and the guy said, we're going to send a camera up attached to a weather balloon, and if it gets so high, then we should see it as a disc or a curvature of a globe. And guess what the last shot of the movie is?
Yeah,
a curvature of a globe.
Yeah.
The thing that gets me, though, is you see they list all the people that are flat earthers, and there are sports stars and celebrities who are joining in.
But they do admit there are no scientists or doctors who believe in a flat earth, which I think is brilliant.
I thought it was great when you saw the Global Flat Earth Convention, and there was a sum total of about 80 people there, global.
Right.
It just kind of tells you everything about that you need to know, really.
Sorry, did you just say the Global Flat Earth Convention?
It's called that. And it is actually called that. Watch the film. They call it Global
Flat Earth Convention. What would they, if it's not a globe, what is it? The discal.
Well, you know how they describe, you know how they say we have gravity if it's a disc? It's a disc that's continuously moving upwards.
What, they reckon we're moving north and that's how we've got gravity?
And the disc, so if you imagine a plate.
Yeah, it's like an elevator.
And you move it up.
Yeah.
That's how you've got gravity. That's how you hold onto the disc.
So basically, we're travelling at 100 metres.
We'd all fly off the top of it.
It's 9 metres per second squared. So it's 160 metres, 160 feet per second or something, isn't it? It's terminal velocity, isn't it? What's gravity? Is it 9 metres per second squared? Or is that terminal velocity?
That's gravity terminal. Is 9.89 meters per second squared.
Yes.
So yeah, that's how they think it works.
So for millions of years, we've been traveling.
Yeah, in an upward motion.
Right. It's a big elevator.
Yeah, and we don't spin because the moon and the sun actually goes round.
Right, right. It's itself. Funny that Galileo disproved it's not that 400 years ago.
Because it's not actually a sun. It's an artificial sun.
Yeah. When you first started watching this, did either of you two get this vision of Terry Pratchett's Discworld?
No, when I started watching it, I wanted to punch myself in the bollocks.
In the scrugs.
In the scrugs. I wanted to bust my scrugs. Because, first of all, I couldn't believe that you guys had talked me into watching it. Secondly, my son, who's doing a physics GCSE at the moment and is going to do a physics A-level, couldn't believe I was watching it because of how ridiculous it was.
Well, but that's why we had to watch it. I mean, to be fair, we've not come up with any credible arguments why they might be wrong during this podcast. We've just ripped them to piss.
Apart from all the experiments that they did on the movie.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Apart from everything they did to prove exactly, yeah. Isn't that hilarious?
Damn it, still proving it's a globe.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah.
I think at that point, I might call it a day.
Okay.
That's the thank fuck for the end of that segment of music.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
To be fair, I'd rather talk about religion than flat earthers.
Oh, I can't do religion.
Oh, like our religion?
No.
No, it's the future.
No, because ours is based on something... No, because our religion is based on something truth.
It is.
What? Exactly.
Because this is the last record of humanity.
Exactly. Our podcast will be the last record of any civilization on the planet.
This will be the episode they play
because
when they say,
you seen
this is
Planet
how
of the
we...
Apes?
It was based in New York, isn't it? Don't they find the head of the Statue of Liberty?
Yeah, at the end of the movie.
Well, we're all in Stagston at the moment. What are they going to find? The top of the chicken shed, just poking out of the desert.
They could do an archaeological dig and find the chicken shed completely untouched with the recording, with our skeletons sat in the chairs.
What, like Pompeii?
So hang on. What you're
exactly,
saying is
just
something's
like going
to happen that's going to kill us so quickly that we're just going to
be in the middle of
the
recording.
And it's until this...
Like a global wave of killer radiation.
That'd be brilliant.
Or Thanos snapping his fingers.
Somebody pulls the memory card out of this. They're going to hear it. Suddenly we'll just go...
Yeah, but then like 10,000 years later when they're doing an archaeological dig, they'll find us perfectly preserved and it'll be the only record left available to them.
Oh, imagine that.
Everything else will be destroyed.
Somebody walks up to them and says, this is the only record of humanity prior to this date in time.
Yeah.
The first button they press is the green one.
Yeah.
Oh, we could get new theme music for the guest star section.
Fucking hell. This is season three, man. We're
and the guest star is ready and waiting.
Come up with a new idea.
Oh, hang on.
Well, it's a new star, so it is a new idea.
Because we went through series two.
Sorry, I found the mute button on Tim's microphone.
Have you?
Yeah.
Right. No, I really am. Tim, introduce it for us.
Yeah. Nothing. There's just nothing. We can just talk over it. There's nothing we can do. Yeah.
Can you press the green button?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Twat.
Yeah. That's great, isn't it?
It's so just, joining us tonight from the 1980s,
fucking hell.
Out of the sun, it's Samantha Fox.
I don't know why I chose the scary music for him to do that twatish introduction to.
Because Samantha Fox is genuinely
that's
scary.
Samantha's that's the
noise
music.
That's happening. That's the noise that's happening in Tim's head when he's introducing the guest star.
No, no. What you need is the Sam Fox's song "Touch Me Now."
Oh, I want to feel your body.
That's the one. Feel your body.
Your heart beats next to mine.
I didn't know the lyrics.
Touch
mate.
Me, touch me now.
Her one and only hit single.
touch me now.
Yeah. If we're going to do people that had hit singles, I'd like to interview Belinda Carlisle.
Oh, yeah.
She's on next week.
Is she on next week?
Yeah, but not the old one that she is now.
Circa 1984.
The 1984 Belinda Carlisle that's not coming on.
Right. So I've
interesting.
Oh,
drop a marker.
I've dropped a marker. Actually, the one hit wonder thing is quite an interesting conversation because we've talked about it many, many times down the pub and in polite company, each other's houses.
Uh-huh.
In fact, we used to have this constant battle on your Sonos. We go to Phil's house and Phil would put something on his Sonos and we'd all break into his system and start overriding the songs. Mm-hmm. And it would just be like the most tragic one hit wonder we can possibly get. And there was always a few...
No, the most tragic was always yours.
Of course.
You'd put some sort of Japanese ninja rock on.
No, I'd always put Chesney Hawks on.
Chesney Hawks had more than one hit.
Yeah.
Chesney Hawks reminds me of a little period I went through. Whenever I drove around to Dan's house, I would play...
One and only?
A very embarrassing guilty pleasure, very loud, as I drove down his road.
Yeah. I saw Chesney Hawks turn on City Christmas lights in 2001.
You should have to face the music like I do when Tim turns up at my house, right? And I'll be in the... Well, in fact, we're brewing in Tim's house now, so we're not doing it in my garage anymore. But it'd be stupid o'clock in the morning. Because I'll have gone downstairs at 7:30 to put the giant 60-litre kettle on to brew for the beer. And then suddenly, the out of the silence of the beautiful countryside of where I live, the blast of noise that I get, and I just know it's Tim arriving. What was the last one you played? It was...
Who Are a Little Bit More by Gina G.
There was that, yeah, that's it.
Classic.
The first time you did it, when you woke up the neighbours and I got bollocked by my next door neighbour, was you played...
I Am the One and Only.
No.
Oh, Rick Astley.
It was Rick Astley.
Never Gonna Give You Up.
Never Gonna Give You Up.
Again, didn't have one hit. He's not a one hit wonder.
Didn't you play Cyndi Lauper?
I don't think so.
Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Didn't I get that?
I don't think you got that, no.
Oh, I thought I did.
I think you got Right Said Fred.
I'm Too Sexy for My Shirt.
Yeah.
I love that song.
Did you play I Want to Take You to a Gay Bar?
Oh, you know that's my
theme tune?
My music for gay when she calls me.
Take you to a gay bar. Yeah. A gay bar.
So my kids think that's
hilarious.
I got
something to put in you.
My kids think they think it's hilarious. No, so I decided to change my ringtone for gay to gay bar. And I thought, because this would just be funny. The problem is, I didn't realise how often gay calls me at really inappropriate moments for that song to be coming out of my phone. And I've had a few moments recently where I've been places where... So I was sat here with Gary, and who's my business partner, and Rob from RBS. So the bank come in and see us once a quarter just to... you know, have a look and see how we're doing, offer us any services we've got and stuff like that. And Rob was here last time to tell us that he's handed over our account because we've grown to such an extent now that we're moving into this big corporate structure within the bank.
That's good.
And it's good. It's nice. I mean, the growth path has been ridiculous. And we're sitting here talking serious numbers and what's going to happen. We're looking at projections, new products are coming out, stuff like that. And suddenly my phone just, I've got something to put in you. Da-na-na, I'm going to take you to a gay bar. I saw both of them twitch a little bit, to be fair.
Yeah.
Hurried explanations that your girlfriend's called gay. I still think it didn't work.
I still think Tim had the best ringtone for his missus. Didn't you have the Imperial March?
No, you had the Imperial March.
I had the Imperial March from Star Wars.
I remember walking down the fairway on the 11th hole at Clapham. What was that course we used to play at?
Bedson County.
Bedson County, that's right. And I remember walking down the 11th fairway at Bedson County. We were playing one of the roll-ups or something like that. We were playing a four-way with two other people, and suddenly your phone starts going dun dun dun.
You didn't silence your phone on the golf course. Dun, dun. That's a red card right there.
Oh!
What about that? Send him off. Send the dressing room. Get him off the field. That was diabolic.
It's too long. That
it's far too long.
It's better now you've shortened it though.
It is very very funny towards it. Oh, he's bottled it.
Yeah. Dirty git. Yeah. Get off your dirty git.
It's very, you dickhead. You dickhead.
Well, that's just rude.
Oh, what about that? Send him off. Send the dirty git off.
So what are we watching on the TV at the moment, fellas?
Oh, God.
I've just watched Series 3 of Designated Survivor.
Oh, I haven't started watching that yet.
Which is a bit bizarre because it's done kind of an expanse on us. Because it's gone from CBS, was it, to Netflix?
Okay. So it's always been on Netflix, hasn't it?
It's always Netflix.
No. Yeah. But it was made by CBS.
Designated Survivor was NBC.
It was made by NBC, but then it was broadcast by NBC and then by Netflix.
I thought it was a Netflix original.
No.
We even talked about it being a Netflix original on this show.
No, it was made by a different... I've read about this because suddenly in Series 3... most of the cast is different.
Oh, is
what about Kiefer Sutherland? Is he still in it?
Of course. Like the key people, like I'd say, you know, the key sort of four or five people.
Is his wife back?
No, she's very much dead, mate.
She was so hot, though.
Yeah, her transgender sister's in it.
Okay.
So I'll await your opinion.
So
I haven't seen Series 2 yet.
Okay, but Series 3 is all about the election.
But have they put the whole series on at once?
Yes.
Because beforehand it was a new episode every week.
That's because it was NBC.
Right.
And now it's made by Netflix. They do a dump and it's all in one go.
Oh, I did a dump earlier.
I prefer it when they do a dump. It just trickles out.
I'm gonna disappoint you. I'm going to tell you about a show which I think has now become my favourite TV show ever.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it is going to annoy you because I've managed to get Tim to watch all of the Line of Duties.
I'm not doing
that. That was very, very good.
Have you not seen Line of Duty?
I'm not doing it.
It's so good.
Too many. Too many.
There's only five series.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to watch that much.
I watched it in a week.
So
holy shit.
I watched it in a week.
So check this out. I've done 15 series of Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, fuck me.
And there's 25 episodes a series in a month.
Did you manage to find your vagina while you were watching it?
I'm telling you, it's the greatest TV series ever.
No, it's not.
Have you ever watched it?
No, because it's fucking Grey's Anatomy.
No, you have no idea what it's about.
Are you going to watch Scrubs as well?
Scrubs I used to love. Scrubs was hilarious. Scrubs was basically, it's a comedy, isn't it?
If you want to watch a hospital drama that's really good, if you got Amazon Prime.
I do.
Watch New Amsterdam.
I looked at that.
It's really fucking good.
But before you turn around and tell me that Grey's Anatomy is shit when you haven't watched it,
I don't need to watch it.
It's amazing.
The actors in it annoy me.
Oh, okay, who's the actors in it?
Oh, just generic soap opera actors.
No, they're not soap opera actors.
It's got that one from, Killing Eve in it?
Catherine Heigl's in it. Sandra Oh's in it, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like her in Killing Eve. I didn't like Killing Eve. You didn't like Killing Eve?
No,
it was shit.
I thought that was absolutely magnificent.
It was feminist rubbish.
I can't believe you're saying that. I thought that was absolutely fantastic.
I can totally believe Phil saying that.
On a scale of one to Phil, that was very Phil.
You
can see studios have been given an agenda to, you know, be more inclusive for all female cast.
I don't think that's what's happened there.
That's what happened with Doctor Who.
No, but that's not the same
that's what
thing.
What happens with everything?
No, it's not. That's not the same thing. That's
the
not the same
switching
thing.
Switching everything.
No, I don't think that's the same thing. Are you, Doctor Who, right? Your complaint there is that it went from a male doctor to a female doctor.
For the first time ever.
Programs like Killing Eve.
In like 40 years.
Weren't written for women. There just happens to be a powerful woman as the main character.
Look, I don't mind a powerful woman on screen.
Captain Janeway.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Seven
one
of Nine.
One of my favourites. Seven of Nine, exactly. But I just didn't like it. I just didn't like it. I thought it dragged.
Okay, but that's got nothing to do with the Feminist Alliance, is it? I mean, that's
and
just
I didn't like the woman that played the assassin. I didn't think she was very good at all.
I thought she was brilliant. I really liked her.
I have to say, I'm with Phil to the extent where I quite liked the first three or four episodes, and then it just started to
drag. I found her annoying.
Yeah, and I got up to the episode where she killed the guy who goes to the clinic to have his balls punched or whatever.
The one who has minor surgical operations for kicks.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And after that, I just fell asleep. I was a bit like, it takes a lot to keep my interest, and which is why this is why I'm praising Grey's Anatomy, because everybody I'd spoken to had said it was awesome, and I kept looking at it and thinking it felt like it was like some teeny bop soap type, like a 90210 type thing, and it just totally isn't. It completely took me by surprise. It is a bit soap opera-ish insofar as
it's a soap opera.
No, I mean it's they're standalone episodes, but quite a lot of the episodes are linked by patients or activities that are happening. So quite often a storyline will last three or four episodes. And of course you'll have a storyline that lasts the entire series, and then you'll have subplots that happen over three or four episodes, and then smaller subplots that happen just in one episode or maybe two episodes. And I've got to say, it is just one of the most wonderful bits of TV. And it hasn't... The interesting thing is you watch the first episode, they're still using pages. So they get paged 911 to run to different places.
It was probably made about 20 years ago.
Well, it was made in 2005, the first series.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, they still use pages in a lot of hospitals now.
Well, they do, except that they've got digital pages now where you've got colour screens and full text messaging and you can call on them and all
that
stuff.
They're called smartphones.
Yeah. They're on iPhones. In the new series, they've all got iPhones. That's simply it. You get 911.
When did it stop being bad to use your mobile phone in a hospital? Because it used to be, oh no, you mustn't, because it's going to interfere with the equipment.
Yeah. Well, when they thought radiation used to make people ill from phones.
Well, it's like planes. Nowadays, you can use a phone on a plane. You get Wi-Fi on planes now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can use your phone. What they say is you have to switch off. I don't know why you have to switch off the signaling thing, because I've done whole flights and forgot to put it on flight mode.
Yeah, for sure.
You're lucky to be alive, Dan.
I mean, it's and as soon as
and
you...
How many hairy landings have you had?
A lot that had nothing to do with the phone. Do you know what I found? The last time I had a really hairy landing, I looked at my phone, it was definitely on flight mode, and I'm pretty sure it was because of the wind.
Right.
I've had a couple of... I remember a few years back... I mean, I've had a couple of really bad landings, as you know. I don't want to talk about the worst of them, but I had a landing at Stansted, where we were flying into such a strong wind that it felt like the plane wasn't really moving forward. Like the pilot was flaring up and he was struggling to get the plane down. And in the end, we got to about 80 feet off the tarmac and he just turned the engines off. And that was a hard hit. Like the plane literally just fell out of the sky and hit the ground. Yeah. And I felt like the whole thing was going to buckle. I mean, it was really, really big. Kind of people were going, "Oh my god, what just happened?" But weren't you on a plane once when they came and had a chat to you about the particular situation mm-hmm. you were in and what yep. they couldn't get a wheel down or something.
So was flying with my old boss. We were flying back from Dusseldorf. And into Heathrow, and the plane was coming over the edge of the field, and I thought, right, we're going to touch down any second. And then all of a sudden, you just heard this almighty roar from the engines as he powered up and got out of the landing.
Mm-hmm.
And he flew around for about 20 minutes, and then they announced and said, look, you know, we've got a problem with the plane. It was an Airbus A320.
Yeah, right.
And this is all fly-by-wire, mm-hmm. and the system that controlled the control surfaces in the aircraft and the wheels was not working, and nor was the secondary and tertiary redundancy.
Right.
And they said, look, so we know the landing gear's down, but we can't tell if it's locked in place. So what we're going to do is we're going to fly around for a second, for a while Airbus dial into the system and see what's going on. But in the meantime, the cabin crew will take you through the emergency landing procedure. Now, I was sat on the very back row of the aircraft.
Yeah.
It's very wise. Were you shitting yourself?
It's very wise, though. You never hear of a plane reversing
to be
into
honest,
a mountain, do you?
No, not at all.
Okay. Statistically, the safest place on a crash is over the wings.
Where I wasn't. I was as far away from the wing as
Why?
You could be.
Because it's got a bigger surface area to take the impact.
Huh, interesting.
Okay.
And so the
still statistically the safest way to travel as well.
The member of the cabin crew who was talking to me said, can I show you what to do? Would you be prepared to do this in the event of a landing? And he tells me how to open the door, let the chute go down, and then stop people with high heels going on and everything like that. I said, yeah, but won't you be doing that? And he goes, well, not if I'm seriously injured, no. And it was like, that was the moment that I spoke to him. I said, look, I suppose this sort of thing happens all the time. He goes, I've been flying for 30 years. No, this is the first time.
And that's when he's starting to brick it.
So anyway, they talked us through it and they said to get in the brace position when you're landing, that's fine. And he said, look, we're going to land at Heathrow. It's one of the second longest runways in the world. If there's one, because I won't be able to use the brakes.
What's the longest runway in the world?
I don't know.
Is it Jet Black Cock, Hong Kong?
Jet Black Cock?
No, Jet Black Cock. Did you say Jet Black Cock?
That's what you said.
It didn't.
Look, you're blitzing my near-death experience here. Anyway, the pilot came in. And he said, look, I'm not going to be able to put the brakes on the one side of the aircraft.
So you're going
to
do a massive
because they're not
donut.
Working.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the brakes on one side harder than normal and steer at the same time.
So you're going to drift
down
an aircraft?
In this landing, and quite literally, it was the smooth. It was you could not tell that the wheels had touched the ground, and all of a sudden you just felt the engine, the aircraft.
Oh,
shuddering.
He feathered it in.
And
why don't they do that all the time?
Well, because they want to just get it on the ground. The problem with feathering it in, they can do this. The problem with feathering it in is it takes an awful lot of runway to do it. So normally what happens is a pilot will put the wheels down within the first 20% of the runway. Most big commercial airlines, including the likes of the A380, can stop within about 30% of a runway. They can land and stop.
Yeah, I get that. I still don't understand where the Jet Black Cock came into it.
Chep Lak Kok is Hong Kong Airport.
Oh, okay.
And it's got a very, very long runway because it's sea at both ends. And so in order to prevent...
And I've landed there.
Yeah, of course you have. So in order to prevent...
I've been on that big black cock.
Yeah. So anyway...
Jet Black, not big
sorry,
black.
Sorry, Jet Black. Sorry.
So anyway, when he landed...
It's not pale black.
There was a fire engine waiting for us because he was putting more braking force through one set of wheels.
Were all the firemen fit? Like,
I don't know because they were in a truck and I was
You're
in
so
plane.
Annoying, Phil, when you do this. He's just trying to tell the fucking story. Let him tell the fucking story.
All right.
Oh, God, anyway, he's thinking about fit firemen, Tim.
Then they shut the whole plane shut down immediately as soon as it had come to a halt. And a tug came and tugged us all the way back to the terminal.
Tugged you.
And... when we got out of the plane,
yeah, don't tug that.
They were saying, now you can activate your mobile phones. I got my mobile. It was one of the, back in the 6310 days of mobile phones.
Oh, it took four hours to power up.
Yeah, it did take a little while. Switched it back on and I phoned Claire, my wife, and said, you never guess what happened. And it took her through all the story and everything. She goes, Okay. Can you pick some milk and bread up on your way home? Basis for Radio is a Disworking production. You can find out more information at attentionseekingmediawhores.com. Overconsumption may have a laxative effect.